Then we was headed away from the lake. And it took us 2-3 hours to turn that plane around, headed back to the lake. By that time we were pushing and it got dark. And the wind didn't come up. Then the other folks came out looking for us. And they were looking in the lake and they didn't see us out in the blueberry bushes. So they went back. And a couple hours later they come out again. This time they went down the bushes and they found us. And they come in and landed. Then they were stuck. Then morning came along and we stayed there that night in the brush and drank tea and some drank coffee. Told stories and had a campfire going. And the next morning the wind came up and we got out of there and went back to camp.
That was on that, when
they
were shooting stars?
No, that was geodetic.
Geodetic?
Yeah, of course, geodetic. And that was down by Platinum. And between Platinum and Hagemeister Island. That was quite a country there. I didn't like it, but the weather was always foul. One day, I was over on the Togiak River with a fella, and the weather stopped him while I was there, you know. That. We had to stay there that night in a tent with a light keeper. The next morning the weather was bad, and but they had a little ceiling, so we took off. Anyhow, we went about 10 miles down another lake, and 5 miles more down another lake, and then we kept doing that, and we were just about all day going 80 miles. Up and down, as the weather favored. And we put some men out on Hagemeister Island. Supposed to pick them up in the afternoon. Afternoon, way rolling, high as this house. Couldn't get near them. So, we came back to camp, loaded up a sleeping bag and some grub, and went over and dropped it to them on the island. A couple of days before we could get back there and pick them up.
See, there's been some hectic experiences up here getting things done, hasn't there?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a rough going sometimes, some places.
Well, I guess they've got everything pretty well mapped now, haven't they?
Yeah, and they're flying now. It's not at all like it was in those days, so it's just a different kind of flying. There's nobody going to the lakes anymore. There's nobody landing on the rivers. It's all from airport to airport. Of course, there's more airports now. And everything is more or less precision on the hour now, you know. In those days, the biggest part of the traffic was to lakes and flumes, rivers, summer and winter, both, you know, the prospectors. Trappers out now, mining men, you know. They ain't now. No trappers out. No prospectors out. It's a different kind of flying. Yeah, that's a nice deal to land on that field.
Yeah. I landed on there last spring when I was about halfway dozed off.
Yeah. Have they improved it?
It's a pretty nice field now, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All
right.
It's
pretty good.
Yeah, bad.
There's
been several planes right there because.
This one hurt my stomach
when
he went on the plane.
It's,
He just went in over the field and then banked from back down to Buzztown. Come right down through that draw. And I think what he did, he banked his feet and split back with the draw there. And he couldn't get any off his tracks there.
Did he get hurt?
He threw him in there. He's got a little cut right by his chin. So that's good. I can see his drag.
Well, you know what that feel used to be. No matter which way you landed, you wound up going downhill.
I always do. I sit and duck when I'm coming in there.
Yep.
You know, duck the little land feet first in the water.
Yep.
That's just what you feel when you're coming down that field.
that when he
you
got
don't know what year he had.
It was early in the game here when he first started going to Barrow. He got those three polar bears and he brought them in here and brought in some Bubba with them to feed them until he could get them meat, used to eat the stuff they had around here, which I guess didn't bother him much. And he built a big heavy pen there right beside of his hangar. And then he had a trough there, a big pool of water, you know. He was in that most of the time, especially in hot weather. And he made that fence pretty skookum one day, and them bears got big, you know. One of them was mean, the other two weren't bad, but one of them was mean, he was foxy too. And he'd be walking over by the side of the hangar somewhere inside the pen, you know, and he'd catch somebody, get right close to the wire. And he'd be, wouldn't even look like he's looking at him, you know. And then he'd make him run, and he'd hit that wire, you know, and scare everybody just about half to death, and keep him running and all right and hauling. They used to get loose once in a while, no trail. Wander off the back end of town, sometimes, you know, some back lot and be nosing around, and of course they were like pretty nervous over that. Harold would get some sleeping pills and put it in blubber, and you know, give him a piece of blubber, and they'd lay down and go to sleep, and he'd get a truck and haul them home, that's expensive. Yeah, he was.
What's ever become of him?
The bears? Mm-hmm. They went somewhere else. I don't remember which one. We had them 2 or 3 years. I guess they cost him a lot of money. Versus, well, I don't know. Advertising didn't make too much difference in those days, but anyway, there were a lot of people that saw them and probably would know.
That's the point of it?
I guess. Yeah. They must have cost him an awful lot of money. I had a polar bear out here, a little cub in the backyard here. That was one of them cushion meal. Archie Ferguson wished him on to me. And he said, the papers are all made out. He'd go out on Pan Am just so you get in there. The papers are all made out going to the Baltimore Zoo. Boy, he was not doing that by then. And he had to stake out in the yard. Not very big, you know. Not quite as big as a sled dog. Yet. And Pam Macklin had never heard of him. There was nothing ready. I had him there 2 weeks. And some guy had some sled dogs over here. They were big ones, too. And of course, they used to get loose once in a while, one or two of them. One of them got loose, one of the big ones, and he spotted that bear, and I saw him coming. I was going out to feed the bear. The bear was kind of mean, too, even for a little fella. And I saw that dog coming, so I just stood to see what was happening. He was aimed right at the bear, you know. And the bear saw him coming, and he just stood up, backed up the interchange, stood up, and that dog got within reach on me, hit that dog, and the dog landed out in the street. On his nose was spinning like a top. He got up and he ran in every direction around the circle, and finally he took off and he was hollering too. And he never came back. No match of that bear. He never even got a bite of him.
And
the bear was mean. He had a mean disposition, all right. 2 weeks I sent him eggs and hamburger. Raw hamburger, you know. And I'd be coming out with his food and he'd be hungry, but he not fighting me before he eats. He tore up a lot of my clothes. And finally, I had to get him out of the yard because kids were coming in to look at him. You know, somebody was going to get hurt, I figured. So Tex Swanson was here. He was kind of a hard-bitten guy, too, you know. He had a shop down here, Quonset Hut, and he had a fence around it, quite a big yard. He had a big wire fence around it. So he told me to bring him down there and put him in that shop. He said, I got airplane cushions down there. He said, laying all along the wall, and he can sleep on them. Well, that sounded like a good deal. So we took the bear down there and turned him loose in the shop. It was one of them cardboard shops, wallboard shops, you know. And sleep on them cushions. He had a box of cylinders stuck to them and everything else, you know. Sitting up on the shelf on the wall over there, climb up and lay down on them cylinders as they slept. Pushing into his fur and everything he didn't care. Finally, he wanted to go outdoors, so he just busted a hole in the wall, went outdoors, broke ground in his hole in the yard. And finally, I guess the text had him about 2 weeks, and he was getting bigger too, and meaner. And the word come from the zoo, the ship in Pan Am. So we built a great ship to Pan Am out to this Baltimore Zoo. I don't know what happened to him after that, but he's probably still there.
I was wondering, after you guys were all together the other night, there must have been a lot of old stories to come up with.
Oh, yeah. Yep, there was. That's supposed to be good.
Yeah, I wish I'd known
about
that.
Two old pilots together, you know.
I'd like to
talk to
see if I could get in there with a tape.
What reminds
goes over.
One guy reminds the other of something, you know, and you get the date to come down fairly close.
I was kind of wondering, one reason I called you right away, I thought maybe you might remember, you know, since you've been around that party, you might remember a lot of the old stories.
No, there wasn't enough of that out there to remind me of anything much. Everybody was having too good a time, you know,
yeah.
Too much fun. Gillum was one of the best tough weather pilots I ever see. He could fly tougher weather than anybody ever I saw. And he did it all the time. And he told me that the way he did it, he knew the country, he knew where all the hills were. And he said he could hear the echo of the motor coming back from the hill so that he didn't have to see him. I see him coming to McGrath there when everybody else is on the ground, including me. And he comes in there and you wouldn't see him, but he was right on the runway. How he ever lined up that runway, I never knew. Pilgrims are not too easy a ship to handle, you know. He'd get on the runway, and you'd think he's going to stay right there, but no, he'd throw on the mail and take off down the river.
Is
it
the sound, then?
Yes, that's what he told me. A lot of it is the sound. He knew where the hills were about when they should show up. That echo coming back. He said he had good ears. He must have had to hear that because I never got that shot.
I suppose, too, like a lot of, somebody said this is like over the Arctic, where you come out over the ocean, where the clouds are different colors.
Yeah, it may be, but I don't know if that would do you much good. Temperature changes too. I've taken off from Umiak in the summer, you know, 90 above. 35 minutes I'd be out at the coastline, it would be 35 above. Of course, there's only a few days we had 90 above that Umiak that summer. We had it that summer.
But what I mean is, when you come out from over the land,
yeah,
where the water.
Under an overcast. Yeah, open water. We'll throw a different reflection on the clouds, and the clouds and the ice will, you know, make it seem like you can see a dark spot, all right.
I imagine you do a lot of little tricks.
Oh, yeah, you have no wall to get by. Sometimes you learn them the hard way, too. But when you're flying up there in the winter, you know, and you they took the picture down. And the only reason we could tell, or the only way we could tell the picture down, he got the ski and money into the picture. The pictures both looked just alike, except for that ski he showed up. And that's just the way it looked, too. Those days there, too, when you find those kind of days, it looks just like you in a bowl. You come here, the rim of the bowl is right ahead of you and above you.
Down to the airplane and hooked the radio onto it, and boy, I talked to Flower just as plain as day.
here until they bring us out some gas. Sheik was there. So 3 days later, after this blizzard shot off, Sheik came out with some gasoline.
Good thing you knew your position there.
Yeah.
This December 2nd, 1961 interview of Sam White by Sandy Jensen concludes at this point. The second side of the tape, which was indicated in the conversation, was not existing on this tape, nor was a subsequent second tape found.